Welcome to another exciting episode of the TRX Procast. Today we have a very special guest with us, Brendan Chaplin, a true titan in the fitness industry. Brendan's journey over the last two decades has been nothing short of remarkable. He's not only worked with peak performers in sport and business, but also founded and successfully scaled one of the UK's largest fitness education providers, Strength and Conditioning Education, achieving a seven-figure exit by the age of 35, which is a monumental milestone. However, Brendan realised that he lost sight of his true passion, which was coaching. He missed the thrill of coaching high-performance individuals to reach their full potential. So in 2023, he embraced a new core value for himself: never stop coaching. Today, Brendan supports coaches and educators through the Coach's Coach, helping them get paid what they truly deserve. He's been through the trenches, starting as an unpaid intern and experiencing the pressures of being called a sellout by his peers. Brendan also offers peak performance life coaching for men through the edge, drawing from his own battles with depression and anxiety. His extensive track record includes his coaching Olympians, UFC fighters, and top-level athletes, as well as building a market-leading education company, launching 18 products into the six-figure range, and being featured in prestigious publications like GQ, The Times, and Men's Health. Brendan Chaplin is a force to be reckoned with, and today he's here to share his insights and experiences on the path to fitness coaching success. So let's dive in and learn from the very best on the TRX Procast. Enjoy the episode.
Sure. No, thanks for the invite, Nathan. Good
pleasure,
to see
mate.
You. I'm Brendan, and I've been in this industry now for 20 years, I reckon. I started out as a martial artist, training with Straight Blast Gym under great coaches like Carl Tanswell in Manchester, and learning my trade. And that was basically where I felt like I wanted to go. And then I got into strength and conditioning when I got a couple of shoulder injuries. And it was crazy how it happened. It just, simple things sometimes lead to great things. Carl Tanswell gave me a DVD and he was like, you need to watch that because you've got these shoulder injuries. And it was a DVD, actual DVD, Nathan, as well, not a stream.
It's old school. It's not even Blu-ray. No,
it was a proper thing. And I watched this DVD and I was like, what is this stuff? And it was about kind of foam rolling, basically.
Right.
And foam rolling really wasn't known back then. And it was a strength coach called Mike Boyle.
Yeah.
From Boston in America. And instantly I was completely hooked on S&C. And it was no different to the martial arts. It was the depth and breadth of the things that you could learn and the difference it could make to people that hooked me on it. I pestered Mike Boyle and did an internship with him in America, learned the trade, but also interestingly learned the business side of the strength and conditioning industry from him. He was one of the first coaches to do that in the States, of actually take complete S&C programs and make them available to the public. And it was learning for me that. And then I came back to the UK, opened up a gym in Leeds, and it completely bombed. No one turned up. I'd bought the squat racks. I had the vision. I had everything. And nobody turned up. Maybe one or two people eventually came. And it was a real body blow for me because I was, what the hell am I doing wrong? Mentally, what I realized was I had no idea about marketing and sales. And I just don't know what to do. And I'd done it in a kind of, if you build it, they will come mentality.
Right, okay.
And they didn't come. And what happened then was I got a role with the English Institute of Sport. This is pre-Beijing Olympics.
Okay.
Then I went into pro sport and I was at the EIS, then British Tennis, Durham Uni, GB Rowing. And I kind of went all the way around elite sport, England golf, judo, worked with UFC fighters, Huddersfield Giants. And then basically I built a terrible website through an app called Apple iWeb, started blogging and emailing people. And I'd sort of seen people, Boyle and some of the American coaches, doing this successfully. And I wasn't selling anything. I was just emailing and giving value. And then one day I decided to run a speed clinic out the back of my gym in Leeds, my new gym at the time, which was now working well. And basically, I'd finished my coaching, finished training athletes at 6 o'clock. This seminar started at six. I went out the back to let people in, not having a clue who was there, because it was there was no kind of register or book. It was turn up and just pay for your ticket on the morning, on the evening. 30 people waiting outside. Wow. Came in, did this clinic, and wow, there really is something here in this space. And I really enjoy doing it. Then I went from just a random workshop to one workshop a month. Then what happened was a guy from England Rugby at the time, a really prominent S&C coach, messaged me and he was, I'm based at Twickenham. I can never get to your workshops. Why don't you film them? Hired a videographer, got them to point the camera at the workshop, the next one, filmed it, put it behind a paywall, and literally overnight, Nathan, we went from a workshop in Leeds to selling this stuff globally. Wow. You know, it was early days. I'm talking 2010, something like that. And we had coaches from, I remember Real Madrid email addresses coming through that they'd bought the stuff, NFL coaches, because nobody was really doing it.
Yeah.
And went from it turned into instantaneously into like a video download business. And then my next phase was essentially mentoring coaches. It was how to become an S&C coach. And it was really informal. It started just with people saying, can you help me? I've seen the videos or done a workshop. I'd like to introduce this stuff and I'd like to work with athletes. I started to informally mentor people, turned it into a mentorship. And then S&C Education really evolved from a video business into a mentoring and a courses business. And then I did the first level 3 S&C qualification and then turned that into the level 4.
Yeah.
That then became a real market leading product. And we were then training maybe 1,500 people a year.
Yeah.
On that core level 4 product.
And was that just in the UK or was that globally as well? Because I know we did some work in Dubai when I was at Mifid
Pro.
Actually. But did you manage to take it quite far and wide?
It was majority UK, probably 90%. And then we did some stuff in the Middle East. We had individuals from the rest of the world, but we didn't kind of take it into those markets because it's good learnings for me, really. The American market is there, but it's very, very established. And we were thriving in this UK marketplace. We stuck with that. And it was great. And we got a level 4 product, then created a mentoring, more structured mentoring program off the top of that. And that's the journey. It's kind of been crazy. And my S&C coaching and still support certain athletes and people that need it. But 20 odd years later, I'm still here.
You've done okay, mate, and it's a great journey. And I haven't had the pleasure of taking your level 4 S&C, but I've heard about it over the years. And it is known if you're going to do S&C, for a majority of people in the UK, they would come to you. There wasn't anyone at the time or anyone as well established or as well known as your company and your coaches.
Well, I appreciate that feedback. Thank you. And it's nice to get that whenever it comes because that's what it's all about, isn't it? You're in the education space. You want people to succeed. But I think the thing that worked well for me and for the company was that every single piece of education I've ever written and put together, I always have what I call the 3 pillars in it. And what I found was, and you'll probably see this as well, is that a lot of education just deals with the technical aspects of that, which might be, here's how to stretch properly or whatever it may be. And it doesn't get it done when it comes to, what do I do with this stuff now? And I always felt that the weakness in the sector, a across all areas, the PT stuff as well, was actually now how to coach somebody, but how do you now implement that? How do you get clients? So those two other pillars, there was the technical pillar, which is essentially the sets and reps, but then there's the personal development and the business development. And the personal development was, what do you want to do then with that? Where do you personally want to go? Let's get clarity on that. Because, for example, getting a job in pro sport is very different to opening up a gym, very different pathway. And then the business development was, how are you going to get there? How are you going to achieve that? And I think that those three pillars served us really well, because the coaches that learned from our content knew how to implement that stuff as well.
Yeah.
And they didn't just sit there twiddling the thumbs. And it's always, if you want to be an elite coach or a great PT, it doesn't matter how many courses you've been on. You've got to train people. You've got to get experience and actually get in the trenches. And it doesn't matter how many courses you've got. If you haven't got clients, you're not learning, you're not getting feedback, you're not actually getting results for people.
Yeah.
You're not a great coach. The two go hand in hand. And
we've
always pushed that message really hard. I think it's worked well for us.
Oh, yeah. It's been really good. And I agree with you. I think, especially in the UK, and even in my time in the Middle East, it is more about the technical stuff. And then it's quite harshly, I'm saying it, but thank you very much, off you go. And try and figure it out yourselves. There's not really, or there hasn't been for a while, especially during our careers, where you do the technical stuff and then the business is side of it and the marketing and social media, as it's got more and more popular, you have to kind of go and find it yourself instead of having it part of as a whole ecosystem of your education to start with. I think what you did is really, really good. And now you've moved more into coaching businesses within the industry and helping elevate their business in all areas. Is that correct?
Basically, I started my new venture, which is called The Coach's Coach. And it's basically what it says on the tin. It's helping coaches to grow themselves and their business. And we were talking briefly offline before the call. I went through a period of sort of being so focused on the growth of the company and trying to do the right thing, getting the team in place and so on and so forth. And it was important and it was the right thing to do. But I really lost sight of why I got into this industry and what was important to me. And if you like, my calling, and that calling is coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of took me quite a while to come back to realize I'm not doing as much as what I used to and what I feel I'm good at. I need to do more of that. And I sort of created this new value for myself, which was never stop coaching. What I end up doing in the future, I still want to keep my hands in, keep stay in the trenches.
Yeah.
And so I started doing more, I would call it performance coaching and business coaching. There's a bit of life coaching in there, working with businesses, fitness gyms and coaches and separate entities, even education businesses. Just say, look, this is what you need to keep doing. This is what you need to stop. Growing the revenue and good stuff happens, I think.
And was setting up a business always something that you wanted to do within the sector? Or was it a case of, you talk about your coaching, you were getting to a certain point in coaching and hitting your head against a brick wall in terms of what you were seeing in the industry as a whole and felt that you needed to find a solution? What kind of direction worked? Was it something that you always wanted to do?
Now, that is a really good question. I think I was always entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
When I think back to even being a child and some of the things, buying bloody sweets and selling them off at a profit and all that kind of stuff. But I really wanted to be, my first thing was I wanted to be a world-class martial artist. Then I wanted to be a world-class strength and conditioning coach. And then when I got to my mid-20s, I recognized that you need money and I wanted to grow wealth. And really what I've done is seen things that I'm dissatisfied with and created the solution for that and pushed that out there. And if people like it, great. If they don't, that's fine. And by the way, there's plenty of things that I've put out there that haven't worked that yeah. well. That's cool as well. And I think that is kind of what entrepreneurship is. It's speaking to the market, listening to your audience and helping them to solve their problems. And I think that's really all I've done. But yeah. I've done it with a deep passion and a massive energy and a big vision. And it's never been about, I want a business or I don't want a business. It's about personal growth and solving problems and making an impact and knowing that the income follows the impact you make. And yeah. and I think that has served me really well over the last 20 years.
I think, and I agree, and we've had different paths in terms of our careers within the industry, because I've never set up my own business. I've always worked for companies, but I've always felt that the money, in terms of money for me, in terms of the salary, let's say, will always come if you're really good at what you do. And you, you can be really good at what you do if you're passionate and you're proactive and you've got the motivation to do that. I've always felt that. I've never thought, well, I need to get to a certain level because I want to earn this amount. I always feel that anyone that works hard and is passionate about what they do, that money will come anyway, regardless.
Yeah, I agree.
It's always a good outlook on it, because I think people can get bogged down. And I find more these days, from what I see from PTs in particular, because that's where we work with a lot of people, it's considered a bit more of a job these days and not a career, especially with retention in certain gyms. Now, I don't know if that's just the way it is at the moment, or whether that's something education companies can do better with, gyms and sports facilities can do better. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah,
but I think there is a gap now between what is a job within the industry and what is actually a career. What do you actually want to do? And people focus on the short-term gains more than the long-term gains at the moment, which is a challenge. Yeah. But I guess you're finding that with coaches and businesses that you're working with.
It's almost a sign of society as well, isn't it? An instant win. And I do feel if you're going to succeed, well, firstly, what is success? And for me, it's enjoyment and it's longevity. And I think if you want to be an industry leader, or you want to just be in a great position 10 years from now, you need to be doing something that you're deeply passionate about.
Mm.
Not just, I want to make money now. It's now I really have a difference to make. And I do think, when I think back to my history, and I can see it with you as well, Nathan, and I can see it with other people that I think are still here and doing a job, there was that deep passion to educate, to make a difference, to be successful and help other people do that. And that's never gone away for me.
Yeah.
Whether it's the vehicle you're in can change, but the destination is kind of the same. That's a bit sort of fluffy and theoretical, but kind
of. Yeah, I like that though. Yeah, I get your point. Yeah. I like that. I like that analogy. You've mentioned the challenges when you opened your first gym, in terms of you didn't necessarily know anything about marketing.
Yes.
Was there any other challenges initially that you faced, and even throughout your career, where you've kind of had to, I suppose, take a step back and kind of learn something new in order to take you to the level that you want to get to?
Loads. And marketing and sales are definitely the biggest problem to solve. Like James Clear, the habits guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, and I've met him a few times, and he spoke at one of my conferences in the very early days. And I've always followed his work. And he made the point when I heard him speak last, he's saying, using habits to solve problems, like when you solve that set of problems, a new set of problems emerges. And his message is, don't try and eliminate problems, upgrade your problems. The first set of problems is marketing and sales. And the first problem is marketing. Getting interest in what you do. Then it's, what do I do with that interest? Now I need to sell. You've got to learn how to sell. the next biggest problem, that's an upgraded problem off the back of that, which I faced in the like sort of 2014-15, is then operational challenges of, well, now you're doing quite well marketing and sales, but you've got to deliver. You've got to deliver on the things that you've promised. And scaling a business was the first massive challenge for me. I was a full-time head of strength and conditioning till December 2014.
Okay.
But I was working, I was running the business on the side as a complete lifestyle business. And then January 2015, I then jacked in the job and started full-time with S&C Education. And by the end of that year, we had 15 full-time members of staff, which that's not a lot when you compare it to other companies, but before that it would be. And we had 300 or 400 people on our core flagship mentorship program. And we needed to service those people and deliver. And that sort of scale, you don't necessarily think about those problems until you've got them. That was a real challenge. And then after that, you're then in a place of we've got a balanced team now, marketing, sales, operations. The next problem was finance. So then you're into that. I'm not traditionally financial trained at all. And well, now we need to look after the cash and make sure we don't run out. And there was a few times that we went really close to the wire. People on the outside think, yep, this is great. These guys are, we've got 1,000 students, 2,000 students, whatever it is. But behind the scenes, it's the old duck under the water that you're paddling away, trying to keep everything going. And so, yeah, I embraced that. I learned about finance and hired a finance director and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really normal as you grow in a business and the business is getting bigger, that you as the entrepreneur or the business owner have to raise your game, but also you have to bring in people that are way, way better than you around you, that you can learn from, but they can do their jobs better than you can do their jobs. You can't do it all. And leveraging your time with people is a massive, massive game changer. Sounds really obvious. Of course you need a team.
Sure.
But the process of going through that was challenging in every respect. But it's really rewarding, and you don't get to build a great business without that. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
It is. And I know this is probably, some of it has a lot to do with not necessarily luck, but you can't necessarily time things. Was there ever a point in when you were scaling your business that maybe we're moving too fast, too quickly, and things are getting a little overwhelming? Or was there stages where we need to get to a certain level before we do this? I mean, how did that kind of growth work for you?
I think that outselling your delivery was that time for me. And it was a big learner. And I don't think we've ever done that since. And we changed the delivery to make it more efficient as well. It was more leveraged, but still delivering the outcomes and the great experience. I think that kind of relationship between sales and delivery and making sure that you can really deliver for your clients is massive. And I don't think that's any different if you're a self-employed PT that's getting a few clients and you start to get good at marketing. If you embrace that, you've got to remember that touch point and that experience and that delivery and that promise that you've essentially sold, that is still the most important thing. You've got no business unless you are getting results. You can't outsell a bad product.
Yeah.
And that, I think, has been a big, big learning for me, but probably is a good thing for most people to think about, is make sure that you stay true to the core of, this is what I do in this business. We get results for you by delivering this.
Absolutely. That's really good advice, mate. And then in terms of, I suppose these days, if people start in a business, especially with our industry, I suppose it can be considered to be quite saturated, especially because social media now is more and more probably, if not the most prominent thing, where you'll see trainers come up all over the place on social media. Do you think now some people that are starting out will need to find something unique about them? Or is it a case of, if you're providing a good service and you're continuing to do the work, then just keep doing what you're doing? Or is it now a bit more of a combination of both?
I think that's a good discussion point. And for me, finding something unique about you, well, you are unique. There's only one of you. That point is important.
Yeah.
I think when you're first starting out, the game here is all about get your hands on people and learn how bodies move and loads of different bodies. And I sort of think my early days, I trained anyone and everyone for free and next to nothing, because I wanted to understand. It's the 10,000 hours thing, and whether you believe in it or not, it's 10,000 reps I look at. And I think when you've seen 10,000 squats and 10,000 reps and all these different bodies, you can probably call yourself an expert in some respects. First thing is launching yourself in and getting time on the gym floor. And then I think you will find what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy. You might be obsessed with body transformations, and that's great. You might think, no, I hate body transformations, I want to train athletes. That's great. And it might be, I don't just want to train all athletes, I want to train tennis players or mixed martial artists. And I think that niche, that interest of yours will come through. My own thoughts are, there is enough to go around. I have an abundant mentality with that. It's not, if a client comes to me, I'm taking a client from you, for you, and there's enough for me. And I look at it in two ways. I think when you are ready, it is advisable to have some kind of niche and some specialization. That specialization could be a particular population, tennis, golf, body transformation type things, or people who want to lose weight, or it could be a demographic, older people, young people. It doesn't matter. Or you could be the injury prevention guy, and your specialization could be that.
Yeah.
But there's two parts to niching for me. And the one is that technical element that we've just been through, and the other is you and making yourself stand out. And I always say to my mentees and people I work with is, why are you how you are? What are the stories that have shaped you? What are the values that you have as a result of that? Because that's really important to share with your audience. And if you share your stories and your values combined with your niche and your expertise, you are completely incomparable now. There is absolutely only one person who does that in the way that you are and the outcome that you give. And lean into those things, become that real expert in you, and then the clients that like that approach will come to you. They'll be magnetized to you in that way. And there is enough to go around. That's a big mistake that people make, is trying to be all things to all people. Yeah. And they're nothing to nobody.
I was just going to say about the common mistakes, mate. I was interject. As soon as people come, a personal trainer or an S&C coach or whatever it may be in the industry, they think that they need to get any client that drops to them straight away. They need to offer all the services. I mean, especially in my day, a lot of PTs would talk about nutrition and they haven't got a clue. They just felt that they needed to do that, even though they've had next to no learnings on that. Do you think that generally is a common mistake that most coaches will make when they first start within their career? Or is there any other kind of common mistakes or misconceptions that you've seen across your journey?
I think staying in your lane is good advice, and know your limits in line with that. And if you're not a nutritionalist, I think it adds credibility to partner with a nutritionalist or a psychologist or a physio to offer a better solution for your athletes, for your clients. and who you serve, and become better at that, at the core thing that you do, instead of just trying to do more and more and more and more. I totally agree with that. I think the other mistake, I would say, might be a bit controversial in today's world, but I think it's trying to go online too soon.
Okay.
Before you're actually a decent coach, before you know how to get results, before you're fundamentally confident in delivering outcomes for people. And we talk about marketing and social media and people struggling with that.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, that there are tactics and strategies to that that you may or may not be doing. But I honestly think one of the biggest things that causes people to get lost and to not cut through the noise is that they don't have the core belief in their product. Because I look at it in this way, Nathan. I think if you fundamentally really strongly believe in the outcome that you can deliver for people, then you would be compelled to shout that from the rooftops, because it's kind of a duty to get that message in front of people, to give them that information. And just having that real belief in what you do cuts through the noise itself. Before we start talking about, are you doing Facebook ads? Are you doing web and all that kind of stuff? Having that, the crux of that being that you are a great coach and you really can deliver, that belief is infectious. And I sort of think that comes from a really good grounding of delivering results for people. And so I think if in doubt, get more hours training people, and stop worrying about overnight success and six figure this, and think about it in terms of 10 years, and amazing things can happen in less than that, in 3 to 5 year cycles.
Yeah.
Transformations in you can happen, but don't worry if it doesn't happen in 3 months.
That's really good advice. I think especially because we've talked about there's abundance of people, but I would assume, especially for a new coach, that takes one look on social media, because you're not just competing now with the PTs in your local gym where you've just started a job. You're competing with thousands of coaches that are all saying the same thing in certain people's eyes, in maybe with the general public. I suppose it is a case of just stick to what you're doing and be good at what you're doing, and the rest will come. And all this other stuff is just noise, because you will stick out if you're providing the good quality coaching and you're continuing to educate yourself and stuff like that. Yeah. I think that's really good advice, mate. Thank you for that. And then in your experience, how important is keeping clients these days? I think we talk about getting clients, new clients all the time, but once you've got your clients, is there a need to have a certain pool of clients that you'll always have? Is that important as well?
I think that is a very individual answer. I've heard some prominent coaches in the past say that training a client, getting them to their outcome, and then they move on, that's fine. And I get that. For example, if you're a physio and you make somebody pain-free, job done.
Yeah.
To an extent. I've had a different approach, and I've often thought about, and I've posted stuff about 10-year clients, and how I've had certain clients that actually more than that now. I'll give you an example. I trained a couple of tennis players, and when I first started training them, they were 7 years old and 9 years old, and I've been to both their 18th birthdays. I've written references for them for jobs that they're now in their low to mid 20s, and I still give them their training and support them with their journey. They're not tennis players anymore. They're young women in the world.
Yeah.
And that's my philosophy has always been, just continue to do a good job. If we're talking purely from a business perspective, retained revenue, recurring revenue is the crux of a successful business. It really is. But I think as a coach, if you continue to add value and you really focus on that, then those people will keep coming back because you're delivering and delivering for them. And that, to me, will deliver great revenue and great business for you as well. And take the pressure off new sales and every single month you're back to zero or whatever it is. Take the pressure off that and serve the people that have bought what you're selling.
Do you think there's a sweet spot in terms of how many clients that you're keeping and how many new clients you need to bring on? Or do you think, again, like you've mentioned, it's individualized in terms of depending on the service that you're offering, so on and so forth?
I think so. It really depends on the approach that you take in your business. Absolutely, you can create a leveraged solution. We've had 1,500 people a year on our core level 4 product, and then hundreds on the mentorship, and many, many other people buying our other stuff, the fundamentals and CPD courses. But that's not me delivering that in one-to-one structured sessions like this. If you're a one-to-one coach,
yeah.
And I've always said to people, I think the sweet spot genuinely is 20 to 25 hours per week of delivery. And I've been both sides of that. I've coached 60 hours a week, been in the gym from 7 a.m. till 10 p.m. And I've loved it because you're getting to see more people move, you're getting better, but you're not far away from burnout. Or your programs are generic. Your energy and your eye has deteriorated because it's a blur almost. And then I think that's a recipe for you're probably going to be looking for a way out in 2 to 3 years, if not less.
Yeah.
I think for a coach to do their best work, and by that I mean truly present in every session, and you've got the time to put into programming as well, I think that sweet spot is around about 20 to 25 hours a week. And that means you stay sharp, you stay passionate, but you still have the time to invest in your own learning and in the programs that you're doing for people.
And do you think that can be done at the start of a business? Or do you feel that there has to be a stage, like you say, where you're in the gym for all hours that you can do to get to that stage? Or is, again, not necessarily a sweet spot, or is there a combination of both? You don't just need to hit the ground running for the next 6 months and just try and get as many hours in as possible. Or do you think for this industry in particular, you need, like you've said, you need to see as many bodies moving as possible. That's something you're just going to have to do, especially at the start of your journey.
I think the blueprint is slightly different for different people, but I think the listen to yourself, listen to your body, listen to your mind. When you're doing a little bit too much, and you might not admit it, but when you haven't been as present as you wanted to be with that client or that group of people, and that's not going to make you into a world-class coach if that's your vision. It's a flux. It's a little bit more, a little bit less. It's the Goldilocks thing, isn't it?
It's true.
And no doubt about it, when you start, anything you can do to get clients and to get experience with people, really, more than actually getting paying clients,
yeah,
is valuable. But you'll probably find yourself selling yourself and marketing more than actually training people. Then you've got that issue that I was talking about before. When you get good at sales and marketing, now you've got to sort the delivery out. And it's that constant flux. And actually, if you wanted to grow a business out of it, you'd then think, well, I'll get some new trainers in, I'll get people in around me, and we'll work in different ways, or I'll do a group session and one-to-one, and I'll stack my products from large group to small group to one-to-one to some of the online stuff. And then I can get that balance back. But I think the real message I'm saying is you've got to listen to your own mind and your actual energy towards the people that you're working with, that's the game.
No, again, really good advice. And then in terms of behind closed door stuff from a business point of view, in terms of an administrative tasks and between both of us and many people that we've interviewed, they talk about the scheduling, the billing, the client communication. Is that something that you had in your mind that was going to be part of the journey to start with when you first established your business? And then going from there, was it something that you wanted to hand over as quickly as you could from a financial point of view, so then you could get back into the coaching? I think that is something that, again, coaches or anyone in a new business doesn't really appreciate until they see how much paperwork they've got to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How did you find that?
It's not my strength. And I think that's the first real learning for me was actually, I look at it as strengthen your strengths and outsource your weaknesses or delegate your weaknesses. It's not to say you don't want to work on them and invest in them like I did with the finance stuff, but and many other things as well, marketing, still do now a lot. But there's things that you're going to be really good at. There's things that you're going to really enjoy. And as much as you can, do more of them. And drive your business through your strengths and then get people in to help you on the things that you either don't enjoy or you're just fundamentally not as good at. And that would be my advice. And how did I tackle that? I made loads of mistakes. I've had virtual assistants, operations managers, customer service people for many, many years. And they are critical. To be honest with you, they are absolutely critical, and recognizing your weaknesses it will make or break how big an impact and how big a business you build, in my opinion. If you think you can do it all and you think you're better than everybody else at doing it, I think you'll really struggle. But the sooner you can bring yourself to do that, the better, and you'll enjoy it more as well. It's a journey, isn't it?
For sure, absolutely. Both of us have said off the call and we've spoken over the years that we have a passion for learning. I think it just comes a little bit natural to us in terms of when our weaker soul, you want to get into the books and speak to coaches and people that are very good at what they do. I think it's important with that message that you just give. With that being said, and you've talked about your journey and who's inspired you and the coaches that you've worked with, maybe to start with and even as established business, do you find that partnerships and collaborations are vital to any business? Like you've said, you can't just do it on your own. Or is it not as important as maybe people think it is, in terms of maybe working with a different company or teaming up with a coach? Us, we say to a lot of our coaches, a coach also needs a coach sometimes, or a lot of the time. What's your value in terms of your opinion for partnerships and collaborations like that?
I think partnerships are one of the core pillars of growing any business. You've got your own sales that you can make and your own reach that you can create. But then there's some other people out there, complementary businesses, complementary practitioners that have done all that work for their own market. And there's a gray area or a crossover in the middle where both parties can really win. And ignoring that is just silly, really. It's a really good thing to do. And you do have more fun when you're doing that. I think when you're working with people and good people, you will enjoy the journey more. It's still going to be frustrating, still challenges, but you're moving in the right direction. I think the other part of your question there about partnerships in line with a coach needing a coach is a really important one. That is a really important one, because you just do not know what to do in every facet. And having people in your team, your network that you can bounce ideas off, it's a game changer. And I would say it could well be the difference between succeeding and not. It's as important as that. And that they come in many shapes and forms. That could be a peer in the industry that you just speak to informally It could be a client. I would say I've had clients that have become mentors for me, successful business owners, people that have shown me, what are you doing, Brendan? Why aren't you thinking about this? Why aren't you thinking about that? And so on and so forth. Really powerful. And then more structured, paid mentors and coaches that you bring in for a specific outcome. And even consultants that work in your business, more hands-on, that it's an open relationship. I'm bringing this person in. I want to learn from you.
Yeah.
But I also need you to do the job for me as well. Even that, it comes back to recognizing your weaknesses, but having clarity on your vision, where you want to go, and who is a good team or person to have around you to do that. And that has been fundamental for me from day one, even before day one, from being a wannabe martial artist and athlete. Even then, it's so important, and I think it really is that definitive intention building piece.
And I think the old saying of a self-made man or self-made woman has been disregarded over the years, because you can't just go out there and do it on your own. Like you say, even before you start your business, you're checking in with people, even if it's family that are not necessarily an expert within what you're doing, but they give you advice and you can take it or not take it. I think I would agree with that. I've found that, yes, there were certain opportunities. I'm fortunate to get opportunities, but then it was the kind of network around me that kind of grew. That has allowed me then to progress and do other opportunities. Yeah. The education side is important, but it was actually who I could call for advice if I wanted to progress in my career, or if there was a part of the industry that I don't know too much about. One of the things at the moment I'm really interested in is cold and hot therapy. I'm talking to people about that just because I'm generally interested. And I think actually it just heightens the overall...
Yeah.
offerings that we can do. Now, TRX are never going to do ice baths as an example, but when someone comes to me that's a TRX coach and say, look, what else can we do? What are you finding? We can come up with different things that aren't necessarily in our realm. We're not going to be experts, but we can kind of point them in the right direction. I totally agree with that. I don't think, well, both of us have said we wouldn't be where we are today. Fortunate enough to chat on this podcast if it wasn't for the partners that we've had over the years.
I think a point on that, to add, I think it's a real strength if you can say to somebody, I don't know the answer to that, but this person I know does, and I can introduce you, or I can go and find the answer. I think that's a real strength, and building your network is what that's all about. And then I think when I see young coaches, some not so young as well, even they just haven't figured this out. I think the first thing is it's the ego. I don't need any help, and I'm not going to come to you for help. And that repeats itself, and you kind of see it, and it's like, okay, fine, let's see what happens. And the first thing is just get over your ego and reach out, because everybody knows that you do, and everybody's the same. It's not because you're not very good. It's actually, we all need these people. And then I think the other thing is, never underestimate the contacts and connections you make, in particular in the early parts of your career. Because in the early parts of your career, everybody's trying to build something, including you. And then they go off and they do their own thing and they grow. And if you do right by that person, they will value that. And it's that those 10-year relationships, even 20-year relationships. I've still got coaches, like sports coaches in various different sports, from netball to tennis to rugby, that would still ring me up and give... either offer me work or say, look, have you got a coach that could come in and do this and this role and so on and so forth. And this is 10, 15, 20 years down the line, and their careers have developed.
Yeah.
And those coaches might be now working in Olympic sports or working at the very, very highest level. guess who they're going to call when they need an opinion or they need somebody to bring in, and you've done the job in a really productive, trustworthy, ethical manner, and you've valued that relationship. I do think that it's easy to overlook those early stage relationships. You want to go to the person who's at the top at the time, but those people will be at the top in 10 years and 15 years, and you'll be there with them. And that is the strength of the network. But don't really place value on those early stage relationships.
Absolutely. And I think we should say the same about the clients that you have as well, because you build a community. Yes. Like you say, yeah. They may not be using you as a coach after a certain period of time once they've achieved their certain goals. You, like you say, you can't keep clients forever. But again, I think that's also a missing link where their coaches will try and get through as many clients as they can once they've kind of achieved their goal or that 12-week program is finished. It's like moving on instead of saying, well, what other value can we add? And it doesn't necessarily need to be financially. It's just that community of clients that could potentially even provide you feedback in terms of, well, maybe you should try this, or I've got a friend that needs help with this one. I know it's not your area. Maybe it's something you can do. I also feel that's vitally important as well.
I think that's a really good point, for sure. Yeah.
We're going to be wrapping up now, pretty much. We've still got one or two questions to finish, but I just wanted to quickly, again, thank you for your time, mate. It's always good to chat, and this is going to be insightful for a lot of listeners, and I'm sure we'll get a few questions for you. Now, in terms of your coaching the coach business, what is the future for it? Do you have a certain goal in mind, or is it just a case of, as long as I've got a few clients and I'm able to coach, then I'm satisfied? What's kind of the future looking for you?
Thanks for asking that. No, I never really do things by halves. And when I've got the bug and I've got the energy, I really want to make something happen. The coach's coach, being totally honest with you, Nathan, I genuinely want that to become the world's resource helping coaches build their businesses. And when I define coaches, it's strength coaches, it's sports coaches, it's fitness coaches. But I'm deeply passionate about that. And I look at that and think, if we can help those coaches grow their businesses, make the impact that they want to make, it goes back to this relationship, this network thing. Everybody wins off the back of that. And I'm really excited where we can take it.
Oh, brilliant, mate. Well, I wish you all the best with that. And I know your work ethic and your proactiveness is, I've got no doubt you'll get there and you'll succeed in the goals that you've got. In terms of people finding out more information about your business and about yourself personally, I know you mentioned you wrote blogs back in the day. Where can people kind of find out a little bit more about you, about your business, if they wanted to get in touch?
My website is brendanchaplin.com. There's a few blogs on there. There's some information about my services on there. Instagram, it's Brendan Chaplin. You'll see my up-to-date stuff and some boring photos of the family and what I'm doing on a weekend, as well as some relevant content, I think. And then I've got a free coaching community on Facebook, which is called Entrepreneur Coaches and Educators. If you're listening and you like what you're hearing and you want to check that group out, come on over. And if you search for that, you'll find it. Or maybe we can put a link in and around.
For sure. I was just going to mention that will be in the show notes for everyone. If you can't be asked to type and search, then the links will be there directly for you guys.
If you've got any questions either after this, please do send them through, or just send it to me on Instagram and I'll help as best I can.
Thank you, mate. And I'm sure, again, like I say, I think this is going to be really insightful for a lot of listeners. I think we'll look to get you back on for another episode in the near future. Yeah, and we'll try and get some questions for a few of these listeners. But again, Brendan, really good to see you. Thanks a lot for your time. And we look forward to getting this episode out in a couple of weeks.
Appreciate it, Nathan. Really good to see you, buddy.
And you, mate. Cheers. And that brings us to the end of another enlightening episode of the TRX Procast. A huge thank you to our incredible guest, Brendan Chaplin, for sharing his invaluable insights and experiences on the path to fitness coaching success. We've learned really so much today, so thank you very much. Don't forget to stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll be joined by Neil Valeria, the co-founder of Stick Mobility. See you next time.